Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
All right. Yeah.
There he is.
You know, I'm glad we had a little talk with our whistling guy because he's not as obnoxious anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so remember that.
Yeah.
He was a pain for a bit, but I think they tossed it out one time, and then, yeah, he's too much.
Yeah,
I mean, we like our fans, but over the top is too over the top.
A little much. Yeah. So, another episode of All About Wine live. If you are listening at 7:01 p.m. on July 7th, 2022, we are live. If you are listening any other time, we are not.
Mm-hmm.
So,
man,
pretty simple.
Going by fast. We're already in the 7th month, unbelievable.
Oh, I know. This is, only seems to be a quick year.
Yeah. 3 more months to Christmas, folks. 3 more months. So
not much. You're right.
It's not. Don't blink.
I saw something funny on Facebook today. Somebody wrote, 102 degrees outside, humidity up to 98%. You can barely move when you walk outside. But we should be seeing Walmart put up Christmas items within the week. You know, so.
Yes. Yep. Get in the spirit.
Get in the spirit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta jump on things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no guest for tonight, I don't believe. I didn't.
No,
nope.
No guest.
I think
you just have
working
to
on
listen
a couple,
to me.
But,
yeah.
Good.
Right. I got some interesting stuff I found, and I want to share with you. First, a couple of things here. What's happening this next week that you can celebrate with wine? There's no particular wine days or anything that I found anywhere for the week of the 7th to the 14th of July. So that doesn't mean that you can't pop open a bottle at any time and enjoy it. Oh, wait a minute. Saturday. I apologize to all my Islamic friends out there, but I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Eid al-Adha begins. EIDALADHA. There's something you can look up, Mike. I'm not sure what that is, but my calendar noted that it begins this Saturday. EIDALADHA. So that begins this Saturday. And as long as it's not a total complete fasting, then you can enjoy wine with that. And what else we got here? National Chocolate with Almonds Day is tomorrow. National Freezer Pop Day. Chocolate with almonds. Chocolate. There you go. You open up some Cab, Merlot, Barbera, and have it with your chocolate. Kebab Day is Saturday. National Kitten Day is Sunday. Aww. Monday, National Blueberry Muffin Day. Tuesday. Oh, what the heck is this? Tuesday is Cow Appreciation Day. So go out and appreciate your cow. Wednesday, National Beans and Frank Day and National French Fry Day. So the beans and Frank, you can have yourself a What would go well with beans and franks? White, rosé, red? I'm not sure. You know, that's, I guess it depends on if the beans are flavored, barbecue flavored, hickory smoked heavy or whatever. I don't know. But that's an interesting thing. If anybody has beans and franks, let me know what wine you're drinking with it. No idea. And also National French Fry Day is next Wednesday. And Thursday coming up, National Mac and Cheese Day next Thursday. So get out your mac and cheese that you particularly like. And there's all sorts of ways to make it. Well, I'll tell you, you look up mac and cheese and on the internet, whether you go Pinterest or whether you go, you know, Google, there are hundreds of different ways to make the basic mac and cheese. I have a friend of mine I play golf with, older guy, and he cannot stand macaroni and cheese. He said it turns his stomach just the smell of it, which I thought everybody liked mac and cheese, but, you know, not him. So, but that's coming up for the next week here. Did you look that up by any chance?
I did. It is the... known as the Holiday of the Sacrifice, it's the second and biggest of the two main holidays celebrated in Islam.
Wow.
It honors the willingness of Abraham to sacrifice his son Ismail. Wow. As an act of obedience to Allah's command. Okay. And sacrifice. Wow. Jeez. Okay. And let's see, there was something about the slaughter tradition involves slaughtering an animal and sharing the meat in three equal parts. A goat. Okay, slaughtering. I saw something about other meats as well, but let's see, where is it?
Goat is very common.
They mentioned, I was reading on something earlier, a few minutes ago, and it said something about... cow and I forgot what else on there, but I'm you know, I see the word meat, I'm thinking, you know, McDonald's or Burger King or something. So
that would definitely
that would be
the sacrifice and I'll do the eating. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's Islamic holiday coming up. Yeah.
Big one. Yeah, big
one. Yes. Yeah, according to you, the second biggest one. Wow.
Yep.
No, do you say happy Al-Hab or what is it? Joyous Al-Hab or I don't know, whatever. To our,
I found it. Oh, come on. I just had, anyway, I just had the meaning, the first one, the first word EID, it shows a long I, so it like I'd, yeah, I was trying to get the pronunciation of it online. It means celebration, and where's it at? Okay, there you go. Yes, it shows a long I, Al Ada, I'd Al Ada, and then
Al Hadad.
I just had what the translation was. Oh, I'd means festival. The first word means festival, celebration, feast day, or holiday.
Okay.
And, okay.
And since it's
the
second biggest, it's just, you know, it's a big one there.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's the second and biggest of the two main holidays celebrated in Islam.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's also a pretty good story about it.
I had an Islamic friend who moved away. He, what was it? Right before the pandemic, he moved. He was there and he moved to New York, but I don't remember him ever talking about or celebrating that. He may have. He didn't share his holidays with me. So, all right, very good. There you go. A little education for you on All About Wine. If you are of the Islamic persuasion, then enjoy your holiday. That's coming up Saturday. I guess it's on that same date. I instead of, you know, like the first Saturday of July or something. I guess it's on the same date. So, or the second Saturday, that would be, wouldn't it? Yeah, that would. Okay. So, okay. Whiskey Fest. I know this isn't about wine, but a lot of people who drink wine do enjoy whiskeys. And I personally am a big fan of scotch. I like a good single malt scotch. And Scottish scotch is excellent with that little peaty flavor in it and stuff like that. So, Whiskey Fest coming up, the leading whiskey festival in North America. And you're going to be tasting whiskeys from around the world. There's going to be a selection of over 325 exceptional whiskeys from around the world. And including with every ticket is access to in-depth whiskey seminars, a delicious buffet all evening, Whiskey Fest canvas tote bag, a Glencairn crystal nosing glass, and a one-year subscription to Whiskey Advocate magazine. Wow, that's a lot of stuff. They're giving away a lot of stuff for a festival. A lot of times they just, you know, here, you can come in, but, you know, the food and stuff. So I suppose you can park yourself in front of the buffet and just forget the whiskey. I don't have a price here. Whiskeyfest.com.
$295 for general admission.
$295.
Okay. Is that in San Francisco? Oh, they have a few.
Yeah, three places. San Francisco, New York, and Las Vegas. San Francisco is October 28th. New York is November the 3rd, and Las Vegas is December the 2nd. So, if you are a big whiskey fan, then all those are good places to have a whiskey fest too. San Francisco is my favorite city in the whole wide world. I love that city. And then New York, if you're up in the Northeast there, that's a convenient place. And then Las Vegas, which is funny because San Francisco is really not that far away from Las Vegas. They usually spread them out more. So there you go, $295, and you can get yourself a glass. Those are early bird prices. Yes. They probably go up to like 3.25 or something. So
that's it.
So there you go, Whiskey Fest. That's coming up. I'll remind you of that again if I remember in the future here. New edition of Wine Spectator came out. Have you got yours, Mike?
Yeah, I think that was the one with the vibrant Washington on the front.
No, this is Charlie Palmer's on the front. And it's the Restaurant Awards issue.
No, then I didn't get that one. I just got this one. And it looks like a green vineyard or something on the front cover, and it says Vibrant Washington on the front.
Well, you might be ahead of me. I haven't gotten that one, I don't think. What's going on here?
Oh, okay. I'm looking at the back of it.
Yeah, because they do have a Vibrant Washington on the back. Yes.
Okay. I thought that was the front. What do I know? And then I opened the pages. I'm like, wow, it's all upside down. Actually, it's not upside down. If you start with what would be the back of the book, it's right side up.
It's right side up.
On the Washington. Yeah. And then you turn it around to the Charlie side.
And
isn't that
it's right side up.
I just noticed.
Yeah. I know. That's
like a magic trick.
Mm-hmm.
Like
a magic trick. Yeah, it's a pretty neat article on Washington Wines there, too, by the way.
Okay.
Get a minute on to and read some of those little articles, pretty neat articles. This is the restaurant issue. And I wish we had thought, I wish we had known this was coming out. I'd like to have gotten the girl that was on last year, the lady that was on last year, the woman, no disrespect meant when I say girl, but she was a writer and did some of the judging on these restaurants and stuff like that. and I that would have been good to get her on again. And talk about these things. But it's always an interesting issue in the restaurants around what they've got and the program and everything. There's quite a few on here, as there always is. And some new ones and some that have been around for like ever. But interesting issue. Most of them are reasonably priced. They're not real expensive restaurants. So pick yourself up and visit some of them. Some of them have absolutely phenomenal wine lists. That's one of the criteria, I believe, for the inclusion in the magazine and the awards is their wine list. So check that out. And if you get an opportunity and see the what they have to say. Wine Spectator Magazine, Whiskey Advocate, and Cigar Aficionado is all put out by the same publisher. So I said that because we're going to have a cigar show at the end of this month. And start talking about cigars. If you have any cigar questions or anything about cigars, let us know before then. Email me or something like that. We'll be happy to present it to our cigar experts when they're on at the end of the month. Also, a little article here, very small article, but it jumps out the health part of Wine Spectator. It says moderate wine consumption linked to lower risk of dementia. And so there you go, 4,000. More than that. They collected data from more than 350,000 participants in the United Kingdom, and they checked their drinking habits and all that, and they found that those who drank wine ended up with overall lower dementia in the group than those who didn't drink wine. So, the conclusion, wine, beer, spirits, fortified wine were labeled non-wine. So wine was wine under this group. So it wasn't like, any alcohol. It was just wine. So drink yourself wine, not in excess, but drink yourself wine to help stave off that dementia. Not trying to make light of dementia. It's a nasty thing. But drink wine. Yeah, it is. It's horrible. But drink wine. It's been proven to help prevent dementia. And that's a good thing. Okay.
I got a note here. I'm sorry about that. You were talking about the guest we had on. Cassia Schifter, Associate Tasting Coordinator for Wine Spectator. And she was she's a certified sommelier, did the restaurant awards judging, talked about that on the show. And, she was on, what was this? I guess that was her. It says, Associate Tasting Coordinator, Wine Spectator Magazine. She came on and did quite a bit, talked about the awards and the judging and everything. So
right.
That was,
what was the name again?
Cassia Schifter.
Schifter. Yeah.
Yes.
I pulled out the credit page, I guess you call it here, or the advertising or whatever the page is that lists all the people. And she is listed here as Associate Tasting Coordinator. An assistant tasting coordinators. She's got three people that work under her, but she is under the top section of her.
That show, by the way, was 2 years ago.
2 years? Oh, my gosh.
July 9th, 2020. Exactly 2 years ago.
Yeah, because that's when that's when the issue came out. That's when, you know.
That was unbelievable. I was like, wow, that went back quite a bit.
Because the issue comes out about this time, and she was on the show when the issue came out. And we talked about the procedures and all that stuff on it. And I did invite her back. She said she'd love to come back anytime. I'm going to see if I can't get a hold of her and, you know, maybe get her on over the next couple of weeks.
Get her on the phone right now.
Ring her up right now. Claudia? You're on there. That'd be funny. What? No. Okay. I've got her. I'm sure I have her email around here somewhere because I don't throw them away. It's a matter of searching for it, and so I will do that. I will search for her email and see if I can't find her and see if she'd be willing to come back on the show and talk about the new list and all that, because it looks like associate tasting coordinator, so it looks like she's still in the category where she would handle the awards. So I will make a note. Cassia, I'm writing this down, people, so you know, bear with me. Cassifter. Okay. So I will see if I can't get a hold of her through an email this week, or find her first and email her, because I keep the emails, and I'm sure I can. All right. Very good. Very good. Thank you for finding that for me, too. 2 years ago. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but it
was
right in the middle of COVID, because one of the things we were talking about is she was saying how tough it was during COVID to get some of these restaurants certified because there was nobody that could travel or do anything to go check it out. So, all right.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we can't get her back and talk about some of the. Some of the awards this year. Very good. All right. I have things to tell you here. And let's see. Wine Folly magazine. I don't know if you subscribe to it or not. You should if you don't. It's just winefolly.com. Go to winefolly.com and you can subscribe to their e-letters, and you get all sorts of stuff. They're offering an Italian wine online course. I have no idea how much. It's a pre-sale ends tonight, so if you're listening to the show today and you want to do it, you need to get it done. It's the pre-sale. Last chance order. It's exclusive pricing with extras. You buy it once, you own it for a lifetime. The gift cards are available also, and exclusive discount for a Corvin, which is a wine opener, by signing up to it. It says here, become confident with Italian wine in less than a month. Explore one of the largest and most diverse wine regions. Pump up your Italian wine knowledge with the newest Wine Folly digital course hosted by Madeline Puckett and Master of Wine Christine Marsiglio. So,
I do have the prices.
Do you?
Yes. Okay.
That's why we keep you around, Mike. You're so good at that. So good at that.
The Italian wine course pre-order. It looks like, it's on there. $249. And you'll learn the 20 major regions of Italy. It's over 5 hours of video, and you'll become confident with Italian wine in less than a month. Or The most popular, of course, is the Italian Wine Course Map and Journal, which is $289. You'll do the same thing, 5 hours of video. You'll also get a digital map of Italy, which is a $25 value. What? A digital map? Wow.
Digital map.
And the 2022 Vintage Wine Folly Wine Journal, which is also a $25 value. Okay. And
that's a nice
if, you want if you want certification, as you know, to add it into it, the whole course, map, journal, and certification is $369. And that includes a 12-part formal exam and certification as well. So,
wow.
Part of that. Yeah.
And you own it for life and do it at your own pace. There's no restrictions on how long you can do it, too. So there you go. Well, good. Thank you, Mike. It didn't say, I was reading this here. It didn't say any prices here. So if you're interested in the pre-sale, which ends tonight, then you need to get on top of that. I don't know how much it might go up after the pre-sale, but the pre-sale ends tonight. So do that. They are located in Canada, Calgary, Canada. So they're over on, that's their mailing address anyway, in Calgary, Canada. So midnight there would be like 3 hours, be like 3 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. So either way, get it done if you're interested, and then you won't have to worry about anything Italian. You can talk intelligently about Italian wine from now on. Okay. Let's see here. What's this one have to say? We can check this. Oregon welcomes its 23rd American Viticultural Area, or AVA. 23 in Oregon. Mount Pisgah, P-I-S-G-A-H, located in Polk County, Oregon, is the newest AVA. It is in the Willamette Valley, and it has received federal recognition as an official AVA. The distinct soil, topography, and climate attributes make Mount Pisgah a unique growing area. The 23rd federally recognized wine growing region in Oregon, and the 11th AVA, nested AVA, within the Willamette Valley. So you have the Willamette Valley, which is an AVA, and then you have these 11 others that are inside the Willamette Valley. So it gives you an AVA inside an AVA. If you're not inside one of these 11, you still use the AVA of Willamette. The new AVA was granted approval by TTB on June the 3rd, and it takes effect on July 5th, which was 2 days ago. So it is official now. So it is out there, and it is the newest AVA in Oregon. Let's see. Oh, what is this? It makes it bigger? No, it doesn't. There are three wineries in the new AVA. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. No, that's this Fern Creek. 6 wineries that are located on estate vineyards. And then it says Fern Creek. They got two wineries there. And Cooper Hollow, whatever. Cooper Hollow and Fern Creek, I guess, are a couple of areas there. So, yet another. Well, the grapes there, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, Tempranillo, and Pinot Blanc. New AVA in Oregon. Popping up. You all know what AVAs are now. I've talked about them enough, so you know what AVAs. Napa has changed its rules to allow Excuse me. Napa has changed its rules to give micro wineries a chance to survive in Napa. They've had some pretty stringent rules there about micro wineries, and they have changed the rules to allow them, which a lot of them are farm wineries, and so they figured saving the farm, the family farm wineries, and so the new rules will be helping the smaller family farm wineries in Napa set up and survive without the outrageous rules that they have in Napa. Minimum size of a micro winery farm will be 10 acres. And another requirement is that tasting facilities cannot exceed 5,000 square feet, which is usually not a problem. I mean, 5,000 square feet is a pretty big place for tasting. A lot of these places, I went to some of them in Paso Robles, and the tasting room was the entranceway to the house, and they had a board set up there, and you taste it in there. So 5,000 square feet is pretty large. It says that also members are reviewing what it will take to qualify for micro winery certification. They explain that some requirements won't be cheap, such as widening roads to 20 feet with two shoulders. And that could get expensive. Get yourself a bulldozer or grader and go in there and do it. Traffic going to and from the microbrewery cannot exceed 40 trips daily. And that includes employees and deliveries, which basically leaves about 20 trips for visitors and 10 cars daily. Because that's include going and coming. So, you know, 10 cars daily into the micro winery. That's pretty restrictive in itself, but it still gives them a start, and it still gives, you know, you can still get certification as a micro winery and go from there. So, it's still a lot cheaper than what it would cost. They estimate that it's about $5 million minimum normally to establish a winery in Napa. So what it would take to get this going on micro wineries is a lot cheaper than the $5 million. So if you're out there in Napa area, visit the micro wineries. They are around there. You see a lot more in Paso Robles than in Napa, but at least Napa is allowing them now, which is a good thing. I bounced and hesitated for a second there. I started to read this article, and I got partway through it, and I said, no, I don't want to read anymore. But let me tell you about it. It says, over the past two decades, the use of technology in the vineyard and the cellar has exploded, and it's changed the way wine is made, basically. And some of the technological advancements have helped improve the quality and a lot of stuff. But the question is, does technology terror? Is technology better than terror? Is the basic question. And the article went on to debate it back and forth, if technology is better than terror, which terror, as you know, is the land and the weather and climate and all this stuff and how it affects the grapes. Well, technology has taken over in a lot of areas, which can just do all that and not have to worry about what is happening with the rain and soil and everything. The article says, does it? And, you know, I read through actually quite a bit of it, and the bottom line is they never really answered the question. That's why I quit reading the thing. it says that tech is not changing wine, but it's given a better opportunity to develop it. The terroir is still important for the grapes and the soil and all that, but technology enhances the terroir. And one person in the article said that technology actually makes wine so much better, and the terroir doesn't really have that big of effect. Once you pick it, then you can start manipulating it, which you can. I mean, I believe me, you know, some of the things that can be done. So why is terroir so important? Because some wines aren't manipulated. Technology doesn't come into play. So when someone starts bragging about their terroir and their land and soil and all that other stuff, it's because they probably rely a lot on that and not on the technology to tweak the wines. So it's still out there. This one really caught my eye. The scientists are finding grapes to grow in Florida. Okay, yeah, good. You know, I am a Florida winemaker and all that, and they said that they're finding grapes to grow in Florida. But it says there are 40 wineries around Florida. As of 2017, growers in the Sunshine State were producing over 1,500 acres of muscadine grapes. And that's 74% increase in the last 10 years. The Ali Sarkosh is a IFAS assistant professor. He tries to grow varietal grapes in Florida. And he conducts his grape research at the IFAS plant in, actually between Gainesville and Ocala. There's an area there. It's Citra is the name of the area. And he said that the muscadines are able to go to market a few weeks ahead of Georgia and North Carolina's muscadine grapes that hit the market. And said the farmers in those two states grow muscadine grapes and deliver them to markets in August, September, and October, whereas Florida can start getting the grapes out there by the middle of July. If you like muscadine grapes, that's wonderful and that's great, but usually most people have to have a taste for muscadine. The scientists, I have to worry about Pierce disease, which is, and this is strange here because the article said that Pierce disease is the primary enemy for growing muscadine grapes, and it's not. I believe me, I grew grapes. Muscadine grow wild in Florida is the Vitis vinifera family of grapes that the Pierce disease gets into. So this really, when I read this, I'm going, what? This, something's not right on this. And, but they talked about that. And then he said he planted a block of Chenin Blanc white variety, and he's getting some growth on those. Well, that's what Pierce disease attacks, is the Vitis vinifera, not the muscadine family. So, as I've written to this article, I'm, you know, he's talking about how great he's doing, and the goal is to dispel the myths and to answer any questions about the winemaking process on this. And I was confused. He's going to have a grape field day coming up on August the 12th, and I'm seriously thinking about going to that, just to see and ask him about Pierce disease and the muscadine grapes and if his Chenin Blanc is growing and all that. So I don't know. But it was, the whole article just really caught me off guard, because I've talked to all of you before about Pierce disease and how Pierce disease affects the Vitis vinifera grapes, and we grow muscadine grapes in Florida. And if muscadine grapes are affected by Pierce disease, then how does the increase in muscadine grapes of 15,000 acres increase 74% in 10 years? Why is it not being affected by Pierce disease? So I think it was, wrong. And, we have other things to worry about, the funguses and molds and everything else because of the humidity and the heat here. But Pierce disease doesn't affect the muscadine. So, all right, well, enough of my ranting. I am making myself a note and seeing if I can't register for that seminar. Alcohol-free wines. We talked about that last week. And here's another big article on it. And it said that it's really quite a demand on alcohol-free wine. It really surprises me. The article says that some impressive products are hitting the market in alcohol-free wine. I can't see it. I'm sorry. It's the London Wine Fair had some alcohol-free wines. The no and low alcohol NOLO sector is really taking off everywhere. It says 49% of UK adults are either not drinking any alcohol or are planning to cut down. And according to Lucky Saint, the leading alcohol-free beer brand, 7.9 million adults took part in Dry January this year, compared with 6.5 million in 2021. Dry January? What, you don't drink at all in January? I'm not familiar with that either. That said, you really don't have to look at the stats, just trust the evidence. Almost every deli, health food shop, and cafe has shelves full of alcohol-free drinks. Not just wine, but everything. Comparably easy to switch to no and low alcohol beer, booze-free wine is much harder nut to crack, which is true. People who have never drank alcohol need to give up for extended periods, but much less gratifying for wine drinkers who want to take the odd day off. But they said that it's hard to nail reds with good taste and no alcohol. And they still contain alcohol, 0.5%. 0.5% is still alcohol. All right. And I told you how they did it a couple, 3 weeks ago. I was talking about this. A little side note here. James Caan from Godfather and quite a few other shows. He passed away. He was 82 years old. I hadn't heard. And the market for NOLO wines grew by 64% in this past year. Price has been a stumbling block, but people aren't really concerned about the price. They're saying that a lot of times it's a question of social inclusion. If you have yourself a good NOLO wine, then you can blend right in with everybody else and not look odd. And so, if people aren't drinking, they're not drinking. I think society accepts that now. I don't think it's a stigma anymore. I may be wrong, and if I am, let me know. But, do you drink? No. Okay. And I think that's about it. But says pubs and restaurants are offering NOLO wines, and they are increasing all the time. I have mixed feelings about the NOLO. I really do. They are a lot of them out there, and they're getting more and more all the time. They are de-alcoholized. A lot of them are made with alcohol and have the alcohol removed, and which does leave a little bit of the alcohol in the wine. So, and you know, if you are a member of AA, you know no alcohol is no alcohol, not even 0.5% in a glass of NOLO wine. So, I don't know. I'm sure we will be seeing more comments and more things on low alcohol, no alcohol wine coming up in the future, because it's becoming a very, very hot thing now. Okay. Get rid of that and go down to, well, I lost it. No, I didn't lose it. I'm in the wrong section. Okay. Maybe I did lose it. No, I didn't. Okay. And, well, I get a lot of junk I get in my emails, so I'm going to have to start unsubscribing to some crap here. Okay. Oregon State researchers discovered compounds contributing to smoke taint in wine and grapes. Very important, because when you can find the compounds, you can eliminate the problem. And so it is getting closer to not being an issue with smoke taint in wine or, you know, affecting the grapes. And if that's the case, then there won't be a problem like we had a couple years ago when tons and tons and tons of grapes were not sold because they were tainted. And it's basically the whole left coast, the whole western coast of the United States that has a problem with that, California, Oregon, Washington. And so they've narrowed down the compounds that cause it, and they are working on being able to stop the smoke taint in wines. The grapevines are ate by birds. I don't want this, and I don't want this. Okay. A lot of birds eat a lot of grapes. That's why they have netting over grapes everywhere. Well, there's a lot of birds of prey that eat other birds, and they are now having birds of prey hang around vineyards. People who have the birds of prey are bringing them into the vineyard, frankly, to try to clean out some of the birds that are around there. And it's becoming very lucrative for those who have birds of prey. They're also using other means. They have fake birds of prey that they have on, cables that look like they're flying around. And they also have different ones that sit on different fence posts that are plastic, that look like they are on guard for the vineyard. They also have balloon-shaped birds of prey that will sit out there and scare off birds. But that eventually gets to the point where the birds say, hey, that's not going to bother me. That's not going to affect me. I think that's a fake. I think that's a balloon. I'm going to go in there anyway. So that's why they bring in the real birds of prey every once in a while and let them fly around. They start catching some birds, and the other birds are going, whoa, those aren't fake after all. We got to stay away from there. And it's working. It's becoming big, big business for people who have birds of prey. these people with Birds of Prey. I was at the winery. This was 10 years ago. Let's see, back in 12, yeah. This was 10 years ago, and a guy came in who had a falcon, and he would bring his falcon in, let his falcon do hunting. And he says the only thing that he worried about with his falcon were eagles, because eagles would catch falcon and eat falcon. I had no idea. And so he had to be careful with that. And also, owls will catch falcon. And falcon are fast, yes, but owls are silent. And they sneak up on them and get them. So there's, even the Birds of Prey have Birds of Prey. But it is working out in California now, using them to try to control the feast that the other little birds have. Now, you get around these vineyards and the birds go crazy as those grapes start to ripen and get good. They go crazy. Talked about it before. Here's another big article. The canned wine revolution. It is here. It is unbelievable how many canned wines there are out there. There's nothing new. It's been around for a long, long time. But it is really, really exploding. 1979? Well, no. Here it says, wine in aluminum cans have been around for a long time. A guy by the name of Alan Green holds the Guinness World Record for having the largest canned wine collection. And he has examples dating back to, guess what year? 1936. The Gottfried Kruger Brewing Company did some wine in a can, 1936. Boy, I bet that tasted really funny. Then 1979, Villa Bianchi Winery, which is just Bianchi Winery now, released 2-ounce wine coolers in cans. And they were available in 45 states. I don't know what states they were in, probably Utah and Alabama. Called Light Red and Light White, L-I-T-E, Light Red and Light White. And in 1980s, Coca-Cola even did some canned Seagram's. And then in 2004, Sophia Blanc de Blanc, produced by Francis Ford Coppola, was the beginning of the market of canned wines. It took off from there. And now it is more than a $211 million business globally, just in canned wines alone. So we've talked about it before, and it's going to be around. More and more wineries are starting to come out with canned wines. Also very popular with the millennials. They are drinking more than their share of canned wines and buying a lot more than their share of canned wine. So millennials are the big users of canned wines right now. They can get expensive, though. But when you start figuring how many ounces you're getting or how many milliliters, which is easier to figure milliliters because you got 750 milliliter for a bottle of wine, and then the cans are usually marked in milliliters instead of ounces. So if you figure how much volume is in those cans compared to how much is in a 750, you are probably going to end up about your price range on some of these. Sipwell. That's the jam is... The name of the wine, that's the jam. There is $50 for a six-pack, and it doesn't say the size. I don't know. Maker Wine from Clarksburg has a Chenin Blanc, 48 $5 for a six-pack. These are just some examples they're doing. Here's West plus Wilder Columbia Valley Red Blend, $17 for a three-pack, which is even cheaper. That runs you about $34 for a six-pack. Here's Groove Joyride Rosé, $42 for a six-pack. And another one called Just Enough. And this is a Rosé Bubbly, $42 for a six-pack. And then Nomadica, California Chardonnay, $54 for an eight-pack. So some to try. Most wine shops and most wine stores are not really in a big rush to start putting canned wines on the shelf. And I don't know why. I ask them every time I go in someplace, where's your canned wine, just so I can get the look. And they tell me where they are. And it's a lot of them are small section. You don't have a good variety. Maybe more so in California, but right now in Florida, there's not a real big variety of canned wines. So, but we will continue to try to keep you updated on canned wines as much as we can, because there are a lot of them out there. Okay, let me find one particular thing I was going to talk to you about. And I got to find it. Is that? No.
I have some filler information for you while you're looking.
Thank you.
That's the Jam Grenache, $48 for six cans, which is the equivalent of two standard bottles. Or you can order 12 cans, which is four standard bottles, for $86. So six cans. So two bottles roughly in can, the equivalent in cans for the that's the Jam is $48 for six cans. 250 milliliter can.
So well, then that's a reasonable price then. That's that's about that's not too bad at all then.
$24 a bottle roughly, so they have some that are $75 on up, and there's a couple others, signature box. Yeah, there's quite a bit. So
there you go. I mean, as long as you're looking at the price you're paying for the bottle or for the cans and comparing that to what you normally would pay for a 750 milliliter, then you can get an idea of what it's going to cost you for the cans if you're paying more or less. And it shouldn't be more. I mean, a lot of times the cost for doing cans does cost you more. But, it does cost the wine more. But it shouldn't be an issue. So do a comparison there whenever you do that stuff. And you'll get an idea of how much you're paying for it, and then you can judge if it's worth it or not. Let's see. No, where is that? I marked it, so I wouldn't lose it, and I lost it. Is this the one? No, that's what I just looked at. That's not the one. Oh, here we go. I just found it. Okay. And V is for Vino. That's a wine show. I never heard of it. But I saw here, season 4 is premiering on June the 24th. I'm going, season 4? I've never heard of season 1, 2, or 3. Now we got season 4. And I was surprised, but let me read you this little thing here. And this is just out of the Wine Industrial Network Advisor. It's the only place I've seen this. I haven't seen this advertised anywhere else. But it says on June 24, 2022, this came out. Wine food and travel TV show V is for Vino premiered its much-anticipated fourth season on June the 24th. Oh, okay. I was thinking July. Did I say July? No, I didn't. I said June. I'm thinking this month, but that's already passed. V is for Vino follows host and sommelier Vince Anter as he hits the road to explore wine regions and their people, history, culture, food, and wine topics. Episodes can be seen on visforvino.com, and that's just all one big word, V is for Vino, and also on YouTube and Roku. Availability on Amazon Prime is also pending. This season will also debut in airports nationwide via Reach TV, which is America's leading airport TV provider, at a later date. In season four, the show focuses on the return to travel that so many around the world have been waiting for. 7 new episodes, 5 countries, and too many wines to count. From the value-driven wines of Portugal to Provence rosés made in the sunny Mediterranean to crisp Albarinos in northwest Spain's Celtic region. Vince explores new wines, food, and culture all across Europe. Vince also traverses the foggy hills of Piedmont in northwest Italy, explores the modern side of historic Bordeaux in France, and even learns about the consumer side of wine in Chicago. "I'm ready," says Vince. "Well, no wonder you are, Vince. I would love to have your job, too. I'm ready to get back to travel, joy, and laughter, and to experience new foods, people, and memories. Wine and travel make such a wonderful pairing, and this season tries to make up for the lost time of the last few years. We went full speed ahead back into adventure, and it's truly our most ambitious season yet." Season 4 is here. Now, he said, you know, make up for lost time. I don't know when seasons 1, 2, and 3 came out. I have no idea. I don't recall it. I don't remember it. But season 4 is here. And, you know, the reviews are great. They say it's, you know, something that's really interesting in the areas and what he talks about, and he makes it simple for people, and he really does explain stuff. So if you have not seen it, then V is for Vino is available at vsforvino.com, I guess past episodes, and you can, well, I don't know if Amazon Prime has it yet or not. They said they were trying to get it there.
They have season 3 on Amazon Prime. It's for 99¢ per episode.
Okay.
Season 3, there was only 3 episodes in season 3. And
wow.
It looks like it was all from, that doesn't make sense. It's all from October 1st, 2020.
And that's
go
probably
to their
they
website.
Posted it. Yeah,
it could be season 3 press release. Blah, blah, blah. That's all they're showing. Here we go. If I can click on something and it shows, 3 episodes in season 3, Walla Walla, Washington, Ensenada, Mexico, and the Finger Lakes in New York. And there's no, season 4 is season 4 now. They have,
well, they have
7 episodes already.
Yeah, that's it shows them here. Portugal, Arias, Baxio in Spain, Provence. The Mediterranean, Chicago, Piedmont, Bordeaux, Port. That should be an interesting Douro Valley. So yeah, that's what they're saying. The release dates, though, according to this, what I'm seeing here, 6/24 is the first episode. 7/1 is the next. 7/8, which is tomorrow, would be the next. And the 15th, 22nd, 29th, and then August the 5th, that will be the last one, according to this. Now, they may release earlier or something. I don't know. But nothing on season 1 and 2?
Yes, season 1 was back in 2017.
Wow.
They had three episodes plus a special called Cheese and Wine that was in 2000. It says filmed, so that's the filming date was between 2017 and 2018. And then season two had three episodes, and that was filmed in 2019 over August, September, and May was the first episode. And then season three was filmed in February 2020, and October 2020. There were three episodes. And then season four was filmed in 2021. Looks like August, October, September. Yeah, seven up. That's a big season for them. July.
Yeah.
July through October, it looks like they got the seven episodes in for season
three,
four. So.
Three and seven. Yeah, wow. Mm-hmm. I don't recall it at all. I don't even recall hearing about it or anything. You know, you'd probably go back to an old episode, and you know, I probably talked about it. But, no, I don't recall anything about that Venus Rubino. Check it out, people. Oh. I mean, you know, if it's 99 cents an episode, you can afford $10 to watch the three previous seasons. And
it says on their website, it says watch V is for Vino free. And there's just different there's links to it. And
there you go.
You can watch on your TV. Yeah, watch on your TV or on YouTube is what they're showing here. So yeah.
Oh, fantastic. So there you go. Save yourself $10. Watch it for free. It sounds interesting. The reviews on it were very good. But everybody always puts up good reviews. You're not going to put up reviews saying, oh, that sucked. I'll never waste my time. You know, I mean, you don't do that. So, it's would give you a nice opportunity to learn and see some of these areas that we talk about on All About Wine and all that. So, and it'd be fun. It'd be good to get him on the show. I'll have to see if I can't find a connection to him somewhere. So, all right. Very good. Well, we're done. It's 8 minutes after eight.
Our next episode will be live again next Thursday on July already. July 14th will be the next episode. So tune in if you can live at 7 p.m. Eastern time in the evening, obviously Eastern time. At 7 p.m. we're on live, or, you know, archives always welcome. And if you do watch us on the social media like Facebook or YouTube, you can still comment, and we'll get the comments if you have like a delayed response or a delayed question, like, you know, something you want to, you know, refer back to, and, you know, well, maybe we can cover it on the next show or something. So just let us know. Just send in your comments, and or you can always do by email, of course, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. So what else? I think I just covered the outro. I don't have to play it now.
That's right. Pretty much so. Yeah, that you did a good job.
A little bit.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week. And thanks for
coming
in.
One other thing.
Safe.
Our
guest
last week, Bloodvine, check out his book. It's a very interesting book, and I think you enjoy it. Speaking of which, Mike, I finished my copy of it. I got it in an envelope ready to drop it in the mail to you. So you don't get this, and so you can read through it. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's you enjoy it. So, okay. Y'all be safe out there for another week, and we will see you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And we're
thanks
out.
For listening.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
All About Wine.
That was extremely loud. Am I still on there? No, I'm not. Okay. I got to end this. Hang on. All right. Go back here.
Well, what's wrong? Now, you went there, and I didn't. I left too soon, and I didn't hear you. And I'm trying to come.